Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You got to go into this, the last two games out of three here, with the intention of you got to play great. You got to win. It's not play to dominate, but play your game, play a full 60 minutes, be in shape, be ready to go, because in all likelihood, your first round opponent very well might be the Tampa Bay Lightning, who they didn't do so hot in the playoffs last year. Neither did the Bruins, but the Lightning kind of have something to prove a bit more in terms of they have the same core they've had for the last 10 years now. They've won a couple of cups. They went to three straight Stanley Cup final appearances. They want to win probably more than any other team in the Eastern Conference.
What is brewing, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Brews and Bruins podcast. After a short hiatus preparing for the playoffs, we are back with our final run in just three regular season games left for the Boston Bruins before playoff hockey is back. I don't know about you. Well, first of all, we've got my good buddy Nick Lanciani here. Chris and Drew are not available tonight. Chris is maybe getting a tattoo, he mentioned, but then he mentioned something about work. I don't really know what's going on there.
Better be Drew, a space cowboy or else.
Yep, Drew's doing some early postseason scouting in New York in case the Bruins have a run-in with the Rangers at some point.
Hearing Alex Wenberg? No.
Questions? In just a bit. I don't know about you, Lancey. I got an alert yesterday, today, one of the 2 days, where it was like, it must have been today. It's like, the playoffs start in 9 days. And I was like, holy shit, I am not prepared for that at all. But prepared or not, it is coming. It doesn't matter how we feel about it. It's coming quick.
That summarizes grad school.
Yeah, that summarizes a lot of life, to be honest with you. But we'll get to all that in just a second. But seeing as it is Brews and Bruins, got to do the drinks first. I don't know if you got anything prepared. I, as I mentioned, have some stuff to get to after this. So I'm just drinking some homemade seltzer. I bought a Soda Stream recently. Great investment. Oh. Great investment. A little seltzer, a little lemon juice, pure drinkability. Mm. 37 out of 37. Tastability, I can't honestly say it's 37 because it's seltzer, but I'm going to give it a nice 8, which is pretty good.
Nice 8. A little low on the 37 Bergeron scale, but still decent.
I feel obligated to give you the 37s all around, but it just wasn't.
That's right. It's my catchphrase. So. Trademarking it now.
Exactly.
I have in my hands a Cold Harbor Novocaine, as I normally do. I debated, because I almost didn't have this story on that in just a moment, I debated drinking a cup of milk because of the possible relocation of the Arizona Coyotes, but also just because it would be different than water, which is what I normally have if I don't have beer. So thankfully I have beer. Shout out to my mom for picking it up on her way home from a thing that she was at earlier.
Shout out to Lancey's mom.
Right. Moms, 37s out of 37s, and this beer, 37 all around.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's talk a little hockey here. Situating, I guess, at this point last season, Bruins were pretty clearly the top team in the NHL in the standings. It felt like, honestly, for the month, last like month and a half, we were really kind of just cruising in to the postseason. Everything as far as the game and results went seemed kind of irrelevant. It was more just about individual player form, figuring out, you know, which lineup tweaks to make. I'm not going to say it's completely different this year. The Bruins have obviously been comfortably in the playoff spot for a while at this point, but not quite the same vibe going into it at this rate. Currently, as of Thursday's recording, the Bruins are fourth in the NHL, third in the Eastern Conference, technically just a little bit behind Carolina on the tiebreaker and just 3 points behind the Rangers on points. I'm curious for you, Lancey, looking at the Bruins record home away, it's pretty much the same as far as winning points percentage goes. Do you feel like they still have a lot to play for these last three games, or is this just a case of stay healthy, maybe make some lineup tweaks, but just get in there and you know, make it happen starting on the 20th?
I mean, really, it's like the last two games. Still, when you make the playoffs in well in advance of making the playoffs, what I mean by that is, as long as you're not, you know, the New York Islanders situation with the Capitals and Penguins right on their tail, and technically Detroit still. So as long as it doesn't come down to the very last game in the last game of the season doesn't matter. So the next two games are still of importance in that you don't want to go into the playoffs kind of backing in. This team this season has had the uncanny ability to go into overtime and shootouts. We all know that. But they've also had the uncanny ability. They'll win like three or four games in a row. They'll look great. And people will be like, we're back. And then they lose three or four straight and they're like, it's over. And technically, that's how sports go, just in general. You win some, you lose some. But for some reason, it feels so Jekyll and Hyde with this Bruins roster, which, to be expected. I mean, Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci aren't walking through that door. But at the same time, somehow Charlie Coyle and Pavel Zacha have put up the same production as Bergeron and Krejci. Big caveat to that being, they put up the same production as them, but who's replaced, you know, Coyle and Zacha from last year to this year. Mm-hmm. And that's where you have the whole, you got to go into this, the last two games out of three here, with the intention of, you got to play great, you got to win. It's not play to dominate, but play your game, play a full 60 minutes, be in shape, be ready to go, because in all likelihood, your first round opponent very well might be the Tampa Bay Lightning, who they didn't do so hot in the playoffs last year. Neither did the Bruins, but the Lightning kind of have something to prove a bit more in terms of they have the same core they've had for the last 10 years now. They've won a couple of cups. They went to three straight Stanley Cup final appearances. They want to win probably more than any other team in the Eastern Conference. Yes, that I'm fully acknowledging Toronto. And, you know, the Lightning could just be dangerous if not looking at Andre Vasilevsky is a factor. The whole rest of the crew there, you yep. don't really know what to expect from Tampa because they are that sneaky good, where similar to Pittsburgh in their prime, the late 2000s and the early days of Mike Sullivan, it didn't really matter what they did in the first half of the season. Their season started in the second half of the year, and now is when you're scared of them. So I would be unnerved if I have to go up against Tampa. I'm not totally afraid of them because now you have Pat Maroon on the right side of history, but you know, that's kind of just my general thought. Play these next three games, win at least two of them. If you win one, fine. If you play one that's close, fine. But the last game doesn't matter.
Yeah, frankly, a team not all dissimilar to their state buddies, the Florida Panthers last year, who finished 17th in the National Hockey League, despite what that first round against the Bruins would have you otherwise believe. Enough star power on a team. The goaltending got hot at the right time. It can be the perfect disaster.
Brad Marchand said it last year, where they were an entirely different team. So
yeah, frankly, that if again, if your first half of the regular season is enough to put you in a position to qualify for the playoffs with a good second half, then the first half really doesn't matter that much. It's all about what you're doing down the stretch. Lance,
this might make me sound like Brian Burke, but I always say, like, get off to a good start in October. Push hard in November. It doesn't really matter if you go 500 or not or above it. If you can be above it, great. But like December, cruise through it. January, just get through it. February, start dropping the hammer. March, go full throttle, and so on.
Yep, and ramp it up from there. But Lance, you mentioned the same stat that I had come across yesterday, that Charlie Coyle and Pavel Zacha have put up the same number of points this season as Bergeron and Krejci did last season. Obviously, that was, I think, the biggest concern for this team heading into this season was losing two top centers. Obviously, that's going to be a concern for every team. And frankly, Charlie Coyle having a career year, Pavel Zacha living up to the expectations that I would say the ceiling that a lot of Bruins fans had imagined for him. That's been really impressive to see them step in and fill in that pretty massive gap left by a couple of legends for the Bruins over the last decade. The question then, like you mentioned, is who fills in to those 3-4 C slots below them that they are now leaving vacant. I'm curious there and elsewhere, like in these last two games, like who is still fighting for a roster spot at this point? Obviously we know, you know, your McAvoys, your Pasternak, your Coyles, your Zachas are all going to be locks to play every single game that the Bruins have in the postseason. The Bruins have had a fair amount of depth this year. They've used a lot of players. Who is the kind of guys that is on the bubble right now for you that, you know, maybe will be in their game one, maybe they get in their game three if things are a little shaky. You know, where does that kind of, where's the hierarchy stand for you?
Well, I think earlier in the season, you might say, oh, a guy like John Beecher or Matt Patra, they probably aren't playing in the first round necessarily unless it becomes a, you know, someone gets hurt or it's absolutely necessary to shake things up with some speed and youth in the lineup, similar to Tyler Seguin in 2011. But of course, Patra's out for the year, so he's not coming back. John Beecher, you probably aren't taking him out of the lineup anytime soon. He's been great, and he doesn't have to play center on the fourth line. He can play wing and still take the faceoffs, and Boqvist can just go back to the natural position that he plays, and turns out can score a goal every now and then. I tweeted it the other day. I'm saying it now for the people that don't follow me on Twitter, but Jesper Boqvist is essentially the modern day Daniel Paille, if you will follow me on that metaphor for a moment. He gets a lot of power plays. No, he gets a lot of breakaways, and he gets way far ahead of everyone, and it's great and it's thrilling. And then he misses the net or hits the goaltender in the chest, and you go, damn, if only he could score. Until he does, and you go crazy because, number one, you finally win a game in overtime, and number two, it's enough to keep him on the roster for the playoffs. I wouldn't be sitting Boqvist at this point. Justin Brazeau, depending on the timeline for him, probably isn't going to be in the lineup to start the first round because you have Pat Maroon. And Pat Maroon likely gets a chance to play on Saturday. Everything's progressing well. He is the difference maker between being a tough team and being a playoff tough team. There's, you know, there's something about having that added edge of a veteran presence that can either be more physical or sacrifice the body more in other ways to set an example for some of the younger guys that, hey, you need to go from being at a 10 to an 11. And Pat Maroon, having won 3 Stanley Cups prior, and being that guy that, yeah, he might not score 20 goals anymore, he can still get 10. You know, he's not the worst guy on the face of the planet. He just brings an element of reminiscent of the days of 2011, like a Mark Recchi, where he gets the temperature of the room and he can contribute as much as he can, perhaps more so than a guy like James Van Riemsdyk right now. And I've loved JVR all season long, but he's probably the guy that comes out of the lineup for me if Pat Maroon is going in and you keep Jacob Lauko in. Albeit, I haven't been pleased with Lauko's offensive output at all this year, but I have seen elements of his game where he's kind of turned the corner from maybe losing confidence over the last month to regaining some of that. If he wants to kind of match Pat Maroon's energy for the first round, then I think you're fine in the bottom six.
Another note I wanted to hit on quickly, looking at just the record in general, you look at the top 9-10 teams in the NHL, the Bruins actually have the fewest wins out of any of the top 9 teams, 46. The difference is they also have the fewest losses of any of those teams, only 18, as you mentioned earlier, 15 overtime and shootout losses so far this season, which is tied for the most in the NHL. Do you think that bodes well? Stat,
normally.
Yeah. Do you think that bodes well going into the playoffs as something that this team can be confident in? Like, hey, we are a 5-on-5 hockey team. We're not built to win in 3-on-3. We're not built to win in shootouts. Obviously, neither of those things are a factor in the postseason, the National Hockey League. Is that something where this team maybe is going to be a little bit better than the record had indicated because they are stronger 5-on-5? Or is that just kind of, you know, how the cards have fallen so far this season?
Well, without looking at the PDO, if anything, you know, the power play has been abysmal at times, if not all year long.
Yeah, especially and recently.
That just further emphasizes the point of if you can just stay at 5-on-5, you can play a lot better than most of the other teams. I don't look at overtime and shootout losses as being that big of a deal because continuous overtime is the thing in the playoffs. Whereas in the regular season, it's 5-on-5. It's 5 minutes of 3-on-3. You know, it's a whole different format. It's a different ball game, even though it's hockey. And you just look at what they've done kind of over the season, where it was a lot of early overtime exits in embarrassing fashion. And the Bruins have historically never been a good shootout team. Somehow they've been a better shootout team this year, and maybe even last year, than the last few years. So I look at more so the momentum of they're starting to find ways to win in overtime in the last couple of months, which helps build the confidence that if a game goes past 60 minutes, they're still mentally in it, which is entirely separate from the actual reality of in the playoffs, it's continuous 5-on-5. Both teams are obviously still in it, but it's just the whole mindset of, hey, we can actually win this compared to, it's overtime again, you know? So to an extent, yes, they might be better than they actually are just off their record alone, because there were a few mistakes that were costly. I would also still say that they're probably a little bit worse because I haven't done the calculations yet, and that's why I'm trying to do it in my head real quick. The number of playoff games and experience compared to a team like Florida, compared to a team like Toronto, compared to a team like the New York Rangers, even if you want to go to the Western Conference, compared to a team like Colorado or Vegas or Edmonton, they don't have, you just lost Bergeron and Krejci. That's like 200 to 300 playoff games of experience that you've lost in two players compared to these other teams that are now recreating that in the aggregate. So, you know, ultimately should get out of the first round. That's the expectation. Make it out of the first round. Show that you've made forward progress. Can they get out of the second or third round? Entire different story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you think about how much that narrative changes. Again, I mean, think about how different the feeling was going into last season's playoffs compared to even just three or four games in, starting to hit the panic button after the most dominant history of the National Hockey League or regular season the National Hockey League has ever seen. It is just about surviving, and it's a very March Madness survive in advance. Just win the next game. That's all you got to focus on. You know, you get too big picture right now, like maybe you could be accused of having done last season, shit can hit the fan really quick. So it's going to be curious to see how this team responds to adversity in the playoffs. That was something they really struggled with last season. It seemed like Florida threw one or two things at them and the Bruins just were never really able to adjust. It was the same issues happening in game seven as it was in, you know, game two, game four, things like that. So I'm going to be really curious to see how they respond. Part of that conversation being, what do you do with the goaltending? Because obviously that was a huge point of contention last season, running Linus Ullmark for 6 games, making the switch to Jeremy Swayman in a pivotal game seven. How do you see Jim Montgomery approaching that this season? I know Ullmark has been stronger in the back half of the season, especially of late. I don't think anybody's going to doubt that Jeremy Swayman is a pretty damn good goaltender, but hasn't quite had the same form lately. Do you think Omar probably gets game one start, A, and B, what does it take to make a switch? Do they do it if they're winning just to keep both guys fresh? Is it only a hit the panic button like it was last season? Is it something in between? You know, if you're Jim Montgomery, what would you do with that?
Well, first of all, I always credit Jim for owning up to his mistake in admitting last season, you know, yeah, probably should have made a change a lot sooner. That's on me. That's in terms of leadership, which is what I'm kind of studying in grad school these days. That's tremendous. You know, more people should do that sort of thing. In terms of historically, Pete Peters and Reggie Lemelin back in the day, you know, they used to rotate both throughout the season and the playoffs. And the Bruins have had this history of solid tandems, whether it's Jerry Cheevers and Eddie Johnston, or, you know, your modern day Sway and Ully, or, you know, Tim and Tuca, or Tim and Manny Fernandez, or Felix the Cat and Andrew Raycroft. They just have this history of solid goaltending throughout the regular season. They don't always commit to it in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And right now, I think you have to. You should start Linus Ullmark in game one. He had gone from barely over 900 save percentage throughout much of the year to up to 917. I know the goals against average might still be a little bit high, but you know, we can save that talk for another day. A good goals against average has shifted from, if you're a starter, to higher now. But again, say that for another day. Save percentage is vital in this regard. 917 for Ullmark, 917 for Swayman just the other night. I don't know if that's still the same. Again, I had class the other night. So you got Ullmark and Swayman kind of playing the same. But we also know that the vibes kind of aren't the same. Ullmark is outplaying Swayman by a little bit. I don't know if it's a confidence thing. I don't know if it's a confidence from the goaltender himself or confidence from the team in front of the goaltender. Because that is something that happens where a team will just play different in front of one guy versus another. And really, at this point, you give Ullmark the start in game one. If he has a 40-save shutout, sure, give him game two. If he has a normal game, you give Swayman the start in game two. If Swayman has a 50-save shutout, you give him the start in game three. It's a mix of riding the hot hand and keeping that rotation going.
Yeah, not overcommitting on either side seems to be the sensible thing to do in the wake of last season. But we'll definitely be curious to see how that actually unfolds, and especially whether the playoff matchup is a factor there. Moving to of Tampa Bay Lightning, maybe the Bruins can sneak into the top spot in the East, depending on how the Rangers finish the season, how seriously the Bruins take it. But it looks like they're probably on a collision course with Tampa Bay. In general, how do you feel about that matchup? Is there, you know, would you be really, if you go into the last game of the regular season, let's say the Bruins have a chance to jump the Rangers and face either the Capitals, the Penguins, the Red Wings, whoever that ends up being, the Flyers, probably not. How much do you go for it there to try to avoid a matchup with Tampa, who, like you said, has a lot of championship caliber experience, has a really good power play and penalty kill, which we mentioned the Bruins struggling on that, especially
in the history of beating the Bruins in the playoffs.
Yeah, and obviously the officiating, for better or worse, I would argue for worse, in the National Hockey League in the playoffs becomes less about call penalties on penalties and more about call each team for the same number of penalties for fucking whatever reason, which is just
not to name names, but Kelly Sutherland. Yeah. I know.
Absurd. A, how do you feel about that potential matchup? B, if you are in a position in game 82 to avoid it, do you maybe not, you know, rest some of the guys that you might in that final game of the season in order to try to grab, frankly, a lot weaker team in Washington, Pittsburgh, Detroit, Philly, whoever it may be?
I'm going to throw back to you with a little bit of a curveball because David Pastrnak last season played all 82 games. Pavel Zacha has played all 82 games before. He missed four this year. Pastrnak's played in every game. Do you sit both or either of those guys or neither of those guys in the 82nd game this year?
I would say no, but you reduce their minutes. I think you don't give them 20 a night, right? You give them 12, 13. Like, keep them fresh.
Treat them
enough.
Like the fourth line.
Yeah, essentially, yeah. Like, give them as much as you can a practice game. You know what I mean? You don't want anybody getting hurt. You don't need to overdo them. You don't need to tire them out. But I also don't want them sitting there, because that's not how they play throughout the course of the season, right? You're playing every few nights all season long. Suddenly, you change up that routine going into the business end of the season where it really matters. I don't like doing that to an athlete. They're built on systems. They're built on repetition. They're built on getting in that flow and staying there, especially for a goal scorer like Pastrnak, right, who has been incredible this season. He's got 7 million goals or whatever points. I don't want to give him a few days off to do that, but it's negligible, the difference there. So I definitely would play them. The question is just, again, do you flip the lineup kind of upside down for that game in order to try to kind of keep them fresh but not frozen, dare I say?
Fresh, not frozen. It's like we're coming up with a new shaken but not stirred, but for, you know, frozen drinks.
Yep.
Hit up the podcast, Duncan. We got a new thing for culottes. Anyway, you know, I get to that to drive home a point about, you know, hunger and drive and motivation going into the playoffs and sustaining it through the postseason, because David Pastrnak is the type of guy that he just wants to play hockey.
Yeah.
He just wants to shoot pucks. He wants to score goals. He just wants to play. Right. So you got to let him play to an extent. And if you can have him gelling with everyone else, you know, it's, you might sit Charlie Coyle. You might be like, hey, you get a game off. But yeah, you probably keep Pavel Zacha going. You want to keep that chemistry going. And more importantly, you want to give Danton Heinen all the praise you can possibly give him. Because if you don't vote for him for the seventh player award, I swear to God. but I look at that and I say, okay, if this team, if they can all mentally just take everything that they've been through and say, you know what, similar to Nathan MacKinnon being asked, you know, at what point do you just say
exactly where my head went, that stuff. They're just like, fuck it. Like, let's just go out and do this thing, you know?
I mean, not to compare this team too much with 2011, but in 2010, when they lost to the Philadelphia Flyers in embarrassing reverse sweep fashion, the 2010-2011 roster just all said, okay, we got to do whatever we got to do, whatever it takes. We're all motivated. They all wanted to be high achievers, and they excelled in their game. They excelled in a lot of things since then. I mean, you look at Sean Thornton and as a president or vice president these days with Florida Panthers, Gregory Campbell as an assistant GM, Adam McQuaid as a development coach with the Bruins, Chris Kelly as an assistant coach, potential next head coach of the Ottawa Senators, all that crazy fun stuff going on. You need to have that drive. And if you can have that drive and not get too downtrodden and you get some puck luck going your way, then guess what? You can beat the Tampa Bay Lightning. You can beat anybody. But that's also part of the reason why you have a coach that helps you believe in yourself and stuff. And that's not a shot at Jim Montgomery. I'm just saying in general, in life, if people need to seek advice from a mentor, I recommend that. Yeah, you should do that, because
it's helpful.
You can't do everything on your own. The rugged individual does not exist. So they can get past Tampa. I don't know how. And I would be thrilled to find out how they end up doing it and, you know, not necessarily prove me wrong, but surprise me.
Yeah.
If they were to play against Washington, I know a lot of people have said, oh, you got to be afraid of the Caps. I really don't think you have to.
No.
You might have to be afraid of Charlie Lindgren getting hot. Sure. But the rest of the team? No.
No.
Penguins. They might be a little bit more of a concern. If the Penguins somehow surge into the playoffs, I would argue the Penguins would be more dangerous as a third seed than a wild card spot, because the Penguins would likely face the Carolina Hurricanes in place of the New York Islanders. And whoever plays the Hurricanes is going to be an interesting matchup to me, because the Hurricanes going into this, ESPN has them as the favorite to win the Stanley Cup this year. Will they actually do it?
Probably not.
Right? So if the Penguins somehow usurp the Capitals, usurp the Islanders, I'm not afraid of the Islanders at all. I'm not too afraid of the Capitals. I'm a little bit afraid of the Penguins, but, you know, it depends on Can you chase Alex Nedeljkovic out of the net? And if you do, will Tristan Jarry regress back to the Tristan Jarry that we all know and love, which is the Tristan Jarry that Pittsburgh Penguins fans know and hate?
Yeah.
Except for when he scores goalie goals.
Yep. That is always fun. Lance, I got my final question for you before we turn to the listener questions. I'm going to let you sit on it for a sec about the X factor going in to the postseason for the Bruins, whether it's person, whether it's a thing. But first, remind you, Lancey, that we know hockey games move fast, but with the DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice this week. New customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app with code THPN. New customers can bet just $5 on the NHL and get $200 instantly in bonus bets only on DraftKings Sportsbook with promo code THPN. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available. For problem gambling, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are, of course, registered trademarks in the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2024. All rights reserved. Lancey, 9 days from now, 10 days from now, I'm not really sure how they decide
how time works.
Who plays? That definitely no idea. I don't know how they decide who plays on day one of the playoffs and who plays on day two, but presumably 9 or 10 days from now, the Bruins will be playing at TD Garden in a home playoff game, game one, first round. Who or what is the X factor for the Bruins to have success? Is it David Pastrnak not keeping up? Is it the power play finding itself after 82 games? Is it the penalty kill shutting down? Is it getting Vezina quality goaltending? Is it something in between?
I've already said it before the DraftKings feel the sweat. The fans. The fans are a difference maker in Boston. And, you know, I've been saying it for years now. They need to be a little bit tougher on the opponent. Get riled up, get crazy, get loud. I think part of the hockey viewing and overall observation experience has been ruined for me in that, I don't know. It's not that 98.5 is terrible, but it's that I feel as though fans are a little too over-reliant on what they hear other people saying. Yes. And that could go very well for podcasts like this one. Don't listen to me, but you know, you got to make the building a living hell for the opponent to be in. So the fans can be a huge difference maker. Bobby Orr has said it time and again over the years. Players have said it time and again over the years. Don't expect the team just automatically gets to the Stanley Cup final. You have to be in it with them to get to the Stanley Cup final. So make the Garden hell in a cell or whatever.
They do, yeah. I'm ready to run through a wall, Lance. I was not expecting the fans, but now I feel like I need to buy a very overpriced ticket to TD Garden next week.
See, if anything, the one time fans should listen to me is when I'm telling them to get hyped the fuck up.
Yeah,
but other than that,
as a playoff hockey watcher, like many diehard fans, I am a nervous wreck, usually expecting the worst, anxiety ridden, borderline in tears, maybe in tears. But that is all acceptable from the comfort of your own home. If you are in the Garden, you need to be loaded up, maybe with some beers, probably with a lot of beers. You need to be
at least several.
Just blindly overconfident. You need to be like, there is no doubt in my mind that this team is going to win this game, and I am going to will them to win this game. And I want however many tens of thousands of fans fit in TD Garden now with the smaller seats, bring back the yellow
17,850.
Seats. 17,850. That number of fans, maybe a few more who snuck in because they were really drunk and really rowdy, love it. They need to be making that place a hellhole. I feel like you hear it more in European soccer. There's like a couple, like, you know, it's Anfield, it's Camp Nou. It's like these fortresses that like The players I'm glad you will admit there it's
because
horrifying to go in there.
It doesn't
they have
matter
violence if it's, issues there, but like, we don't need that part. But
it doesn't matter if it's experience. A top Premier League team or your local, like 5,000 people live in this town, but they care about their club. That mentality is what applies to playoff hockey. And I think the atmosphere of the Garden has changed for the better in the last month or so. Mm-hmm. That may or may not be a reflection of how the team is doing on the ice. But again, the fans, you know, if you remember 2011, bring it back up to 11.
Yeah. I think especially, again, reflecting a little bit too much on last season, like you go into game seven, people are nervous. And that I think that was very tangible at the Garden. I mean, I wasn't there, but from everything that I saw, you could tell that people were nervous. I think with a little bit less on the expectations ladder this season going into the playoffs, I feel like it's on the fans to bring that back up again. And not there's no nervous energy here. It's not allowed. Banish it. Get that out of here. We want pure, willfully ignorant, just we're gonna do this thing. And the fans are gonna be a part of it. That's what I want at the Garden.
Now watch, we're gonna get called out for cheering too much for the team on Twitter. And
yeah,
you know, Ty Anderson will come save us and be like, don't listen to anyone that says that.
Shouts Ty. We're literally
you
called
cheer for a team for a reason. Why are you a fan of a team if you aren't going to consider yourself to be a fan of a team?
Yeah, it's a paradox. To the listener questions or the host questions, because Chris and Drew has asked two of them. First question is from Chris. He says, what the hell? And that was in response to Noah Hanifin signing an 8-year contract extension with the Vegas Golden Knights. Wait, I was told that he was coming to Boston because he's a local guy, and that's a narrative that's always a thing. Lancey, are you surprised by Noah Hanifin gambling away his future in Vegas? Hopefully not literally, but 8 years.
I think that's kind of frowned upon.
Yeah.
Just ask Pete Rose.
Or Shohei Ohtani's interpreter, but.
Yeah, oh God, you've seen the latest on that today. Yeah, Noah Hanifin sticking around in Vegas doesn't surprise me. The Golden Knights have found a replacement for somebody on their team. You'll find out this summer. But yeah, that's just what they do. They bring in someone, that's their guy, until they find someone better than that guy. Then they kick that guy out and they bring in a new guy. And I'm all for it. You know what? You want to go out and win? Put the best team on the ice that you can possibly put in terms of product and everything. Having said that, quick check of the standings. The Golden Knights are currently the second wild card in the Western Conference. But hey, they just won a cup. There's not as many expectations going into this postseason compared to last year. But good news for Noah Hanifin, he's getting paid.
Yeah, I actually just saw where Vegas is in the standings, and I was pretty shocked. Didn't realize it was coming down to the wire like that.
They've been driving me crazy lately because Aiden Hill is one of the goalies. He's been injured. He's back in. All that fun stuff.
Yep. Drew asks, Zaka? Yes.
Love him.
That's my answer. Yes. Drew also asks, which Bruin can dunk best?
Well, we don't have Zdeno Chara playing anymore. Yeah, so
that would have been a shoe-in.
You could if you wanted to be funny with it and say Brad Marchand. But
yeah.
You know what? They were just saying this in one of the cool things from Elaine. Trent Frederick seems like an all-around athlete from the sounds of it, according to Charlie Coyle. So I'm going to go with Trent or Fred, maybe Eric.
Understandable. Yeah, I was going to go with Charlie Coyle, actually. I feel like he's got a little mean street ball in him. I can see
absolute
him throwing
rocket.
A few down. Yeah. Plus, he's a man rocket, so you gotta respect that. Your favorite question, which you've already sort of answered, the final one from Drew. What is the first beer Drew should get in New York? Is it a Pilsner, an IPA, a lager, or other?
Well, you know, as they'd say on the podcast, we would probably go with Miller Lite, but I understand right about now that they're being pretty unfair in their negotiation tactics, if they're even negotiating at all, with their union. So, I don't know, maybe go with the Bud Light this time around.
They're also being unfair in their negotiating tactics with us in the sense that they have not negotiated with us at all. So,
right. So, Miller Lite, first of all, pay your workers a livable, fair wage. And second, hit up the podcast. Not that we just criticized you or anything.
Preferably in that order. Yeah.
This is like that moment on Last Week Tonight. So every week on Last Week Tonight where John Oliver says something along the lines of, isn't that right, business daddy or whatever. you know.
Yeah. Shouts to HBO. Shouts to John Oliver calling out HBO. I got to catch up on this week. Always some good content. Drew, I'm going to tell you, you probably should start with a light lager. Having had plenty of nights out on the town with Drew, I think he's going to have a long weekend in New York. We're going to start a little lighter. We'll work our way up to the IPAs. So
I got to experience drunk Drew firsthand just last month. I mean, I've experienced it before way back in the day. But you know, it was a great time last month for me personally. It ended, we started the night, we had a great time. We ended up running into Evan Marinovsky. That was a fun time.
Oh, nice.
He at least recognized Drew, probably had no idea who the hell I was. And then by the end of the night, we ran to Pete Blackburn, and that was the greatest moment of my life. So nice. Shouts Pete.
Gotta get him back on the pod.
You do. And when you do, I'll be here to say hi to him.
Yeah. That's good. All right, everybody, we'll be back next week with some more playoff previews, and then we'll keep chugging away from there until we are inevitably disappointed and then probably take a few weeks off out of sadness. But Lancey, I'm sure we'll be having you on throughout the playoff endeavors here. Thanks, as always, for, I would say, filling in, but it doesn't really feel like filling in at this point. I think you're just...
I live here now.
Yeah, you live here now. You've taken the Twitter. It's good. Follow us on Twitter at Brews and Bruins. Send us an email. Send us a voice message. I'm sure you can find all of that. Follow Lancey.
Send a carrier pigeon.
The carrier pigeon would be sweet. I would love to get a carrier pigeon for this show. That would be
awesome. Send a case of beer with a handwritten note.
Send a carrier pigeon with a case of beer.
Even more impressive.
That would be awesome. That would be a hell of a pigeon. That would be an NHL caliber pigeon right there.
That would be a pigeon on steroids.
I love it. All right. We'll see you when we see you. Go Bees. We're allowed to say that.